I did shorten my title, so the one she read was actually the one I gave them, but it was so long, I left out the most important part on this slide, which is about resources and opportunities, but I will talk about that quite a bit in a minute. At AIP, we have a staff actually of 12 people who collect data on all kinds of education and employment related to physics, and I do most of this stuff on women and minorities in physics. We did get funded by a private foundation and also by the National Science Foundation. And I wanted to start with, a lot of times I give this talk to physics audiences, some of whom may not really have thought about why should we survey women in physics, why should we do it? I mean, you're here, so you probably already have an idea about that. And I apologize for these titles not being in the same order as the lines. But you can see here, physics is the red one, or the red one on the bottom, okay? And the reason why we look at physics as a separate field is that because of all the sciences, it has the lowest representation of women. Biological sciences is at the top there. This is at the bachelor's degree level. And then computer science is, well, I should probably go in better order than that. Chemistry right below biological sciences, then math and statistics, and then computer science, which actually is still continuing to show a decline. Another reason to study physics separately is that, at least in the States, it's been lumped together, because it is a small field, it's been lumped together with other physical sciences, so when it gets lumped with other physical sciences, which means chemistry, you can't really tell what's going on in physics, and you can tell that, at least in terms of representation, chemistry and physics are in two different places, with chemistry having a lot more women than physics does. So that's why the AIP has an interest in collecting data and disseminating data about women in physics, because it's part of our mission to make physics accessible to everyone. Here's in case you're not a numbers person, here's a visual representation of why to study women in physics. This is from about 15 years ago, I think. I've tried to count the women. I think I found 6 or 7. This is an international conference. You're here, you know this, there's just not a lot of women in physics. Here's a quotation from a study, actually from the Global Survey of Physicists. There have been three parts to that, three different global surveys of physicists. This is the second one, where I had a woman from Spain answering in English what she thought were some of the barriers to her success in physics. And I put this quote up here because it really talks about some of the parts of the problem that we're going to talk about. I've been observing women in physics for, like I said earlier this morning, about 15 years. And much of the rhetoric or the dialogue about women in physics so far has centered on representation. And the assumption, especially among some older physicists, tends to be, if we could just get representation up to a certain level, I don't know what that would be, but if we could just get some more women here, everything would be fine. And our Spanish woman mentions that. She mentions representation. She's the only woman, okay? So that's an issue for her. But then she goes on to some of the more qualitative or experiential effects of being a woman in physics. She talks about the climate, when people interrupt or don't listen, okay? So she's talking about there's more to the experience of being a woman in physics than just being the only one. And it's my hypothesis, or my belief actually, that even if we were to magically increase the percentage of women in physics overnight to 50%, there still could be some of these other problems for women in physics. There could still be in a climate where people don't listen to you or don't believe that you did the work or think that you should be helping or learning or something instead of, you know, doing your own active research. Sociologically, I mean, it doesn't take much to imagine, because we've had these, there are situations where the group that's being discriminated against is not the small group, okay? For example, South Africa, until the end of apartheid, the largest group, at least numerically, was being discriminated against. So just because you have a certain level of representation doesn't mean that things are good for that group in that field. So that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about some more today. It's not just an issue for women in physics of representation, but also for changing the situation, changing the experience of being a woman in physics, changing the climate, so to speak. So that's what I just said here in the first bullet. We also have to have data on other factors that affect women's careers. And I've been to a lot of physics talks where women talk about their experiences, and that's very valuable. But of course, if we want to affect social change, we need to have data. So these are data on what's happening to people, because data can be very persuasive, especially among scientists, right? If you can show them data, then they think, oh yes, well, of course, definitely, we must change. You know, if you can come to them with your lab measurements and say, my lab is smaller than his lab, and all the women's labs together are smaller than the guys' labs, then the dean at MIT might do something. That really happened, by the way. In this study, we're going to focus on these four topics, okay? People's experiences in their educational systems, which was difficult to do across a multinational situation, because educational systems do vary a lot from country to country. So we had to take that into account when designing our survey and our analysis. We're going to talk about work and family and see what the people's experiences were in that, and then opportunities that people had to do things that would help them advance their career, and then the resources that they may have been given by their places of employment, their institutions, to get that work done. And we're going to be looking at sex differences and all those. Why do this globally? Well, we started working, I guess, around 2002, so it's been about 10 years, with the working group of IUPAP, which is the International Union of Pure and Applied Physicists. They have a women's working group, and every 3 years they organize a conference, for an international conference for women in physics. And I just heard that next year's conference is going to be here. Is that right? I hope it was okay to say that publicly. So I'm quite excited to have it in North America, although I do like exotic places. I'm tired of long airplane trips, because we've had it in Korea and South Africa and some really great places. But, you know, hey, Canada's a great place too. And it's definitely cooler than where I live, and I love that. We also want to, as part of these women's working groups, each country has a team. So there'd be a team from the United States, team from Canada, team from India, for example. And a lot of these countries have done their own surveys to try to figure out what's the situation for women in physics in that country. But we wanted to have an instrument that would explain, you know, that you could compare across countries. Because if you use a different instrument or a different ruler to measure something in India than you do in the United States, then those results really aren't comparable. So if we approach it with one questionnaire, one instrument, then we can compare results across country and hope to learn something about how things are different in different areas. Now, with that said, the only distinction I'm going to be making between areas today is between less developed and more developed countries. So today I'm not going to present, you know, country by country level analysis. We haven't gotten to that yet. Now, I've already mentioned that there were two. This is the third one that I'm going to be talking about today. There were two previous global surveys of physics. In each of those surveys, more than 1,000 women from 50 countries responded to each survey. Only women were included, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. And those surveys were done in English only. This survey is different. I've already talked about this. We want to ensure collaborability across the countries. And this time we wanted to show how women's experiences were different from men. I mean, it was nice to have data from women talking about their experiences in physics, but we didn't know if those were different from men's. So this time we included men to try to figure that out, so we could test, you know, are there statistically significant differences between women's experiences and men's experiences. We also wanted to provide the survey in languages other than English, because we felt that that might be a barrier to some people's participation. Although lots of people in physics speak at least some English, you know, that can provide a barrier. And I do think providing the survey in other languages helped some with that. What languages did we use? Well, we went with the UN languages, which are the first ones listed there. English, French, Russian, Arabic, Chinese, and Spanish. German and Japanese, that interestingly are not UN languages. If you think about the UN being set up at the end of World War II, then you can probably figure out why those aren't. But so we included those because obviously there's lots and lots of physicists in those two countries or speaking that language. I know this, you can't really see this too well probably, but this was what you saw if you went to the survey while it was open. It may still be up there, I don't know. But then see, you could choose your language. It all says, welcome to the Global Survey of Physicists, and then you could click your link, and the survey would be presented in the language of your choice. We worked with the team leaders from countries that spoke those languages to make sure that the translation was done correctly. They didn't actually translate it for us. We hired a professional firm to do that, but then they made sure that the physics and the sense of the question was still there. Just methodologically, I can talk a little bit about how the survey was distributed. There were these IUPAP teams in each country, and we sent a link to the team leader in each country who then distributed it to her contacts, because usually the team leader is a woman. And so it was kind of spread around that way. The survey itself contained instructions to forward it to someone that you know, especially if you have a woman colleague, it said. Now, we did want to do, where it was possible, where we could work with physical societies, we wanted to do sample surveys where possible, and we were able to work that out with the American Physical Society and the German Physical Society so that the results from those surveys are representative of their memberships. But again, I'm not going to talk about those separately today. It also went to the entire membership of the Japanese Physical Society, who were very enthusiastic about the survey and sent it to everyone. It was open for about a year, which is a long time for a survey, but we had problems getting respondents from China. We finally got someone to help us with that, and we ended up with a lot of respondents from China, as you can see from the map. The darker colors represent the areas where we had more respondents, and it pretty much corresponds, I think, to the distribution of where physics is done and to, you know, population centers and things like that. You can see in Africa, not as many physicists there. Okay, we had a quite different response rate to this survey. We had in the past 50 countries, now we have 130 countries. We have almost 15,000 respondents. Most of them from very highly developed countries, which makes sense because that's where the funding for physics research is. But 25% were from less developed countries. And I'll talk in just a minute about what we did for less developed and more developed. And they were employed in all types of jobs, so it wasn't limited just to physicists and academia. We used the United Nations definition. Since our analysis, we started the analysis in 2010. They changed the definition of what's very highly developed each year, so this is the 2010 list. For very highly developed nations, there are four categories on this list on this categorization of development. And so to be, you know, these are the countries that are the most highly developed. There you can see Canada over in the first column. And this is in order, so starting with Norway at the top all the way down to Barbados, and then right there is the cutoff to the next lower category of development. In this talk, like I mentioned before, I'm going to be comparing the responses from people from very highly developed nations to responses for people from less developed nations, and so you're going to see that in just a minute. Okay, first I want to talk about education. I just have one slide on that. And I wanted to show it, though, because it relates to something we talked about this morning, which is the importance of early experiences. If you start reading these pie charts aren't the best, they're kind of hard to read, but start reading it up there at 12 o'clock, going clockwise around, that's the younger experiences there in the blue and the red. So before secondary school and during secondary school, you can see that very highly developed countries, most of the people who decided to choose physics as a career did so very early. And then in the less developed countries, again, it was about 50%. I think a lot of the reason for the very high percentage in the very highly developed countries is Europe's system of you know, more or less putting on a certain track pretty early. Okay, let me talk for a minute about work and family, which I think is going to relate to some of the discussion we had this morning. We asked some people, like Carla mentioned, we don't ask people, are you better off than men, or something like that. We don't ask that kind of question. We ask the question and then look statistically for sex differences between the answers to the questions. This question we just put to the respondents, how did your career change because you are a parent? Notice the top row there, the people most likely to say it didn't change at all were men. Okay, so again, this points out the cultural expectations that we've mentioned before, that men are, more free to do things other than childcare and parenting. The women, though, had responses that they did change. Not a majority of women changed, because I think in physics we still are expected to conform to that ideal worker a stereotype or expectation that Carla talked about. And to be an ideal worker, you can't really do some of these things, but some of the women did it anyway, okay? They chose less demanding or more flexible work schedules. They spent less time at work. This is a really interesting answer. They were more productive or efficient at work. And I got a lot of that in the people writing out answers, their sentences, instead of just a checkbox. They'd say, I went to work, and because I had to pick somebody up from daycare, I got my work done. I didn't spend time playing bridge or juggling or, whatever we're doing there other than working. I got there and I got my work done and I left. And I'm going to talk some more about this career or rate of promotion. That's one of my dependent variables later on in the study. Not this question, but you can see some evidence from it. My career or rate of promotion slowed significantly. The women were more likely to say that compared to the men. Okay, sociologists also know that your parenting status and your family status can affect your career, but it can also affect the other way around. Like, your career can affect what you do with your personal life sometimes. I know anecdotally there's a lot of older women physicists who maybe never married or didn't have children because of their career. They felt, they needed to focus on the physics. So this question actually asked people that. You can see that women, this is the percentage who said yes, women were actually much more likely to say that than men. And it's divided up between less developed and very highly developed countries, with a very big difference in the very highly developed countries between women and men. So what we're saying here is that women are more likely to change themselves to fit into, what they think science needs, what they think the organization needs. This asks about how much schooling did your partner or spouse complete? We also had a slide that I didn't bring with me that shows that women are much more likely to be married to other physicists. And you can see here that women are much more likely to be married to someone else who has a doctoral degree. That's that big light blue bar. And men are much more likely to be married to someone with less education than they, okay? So the women are married to, other people with doctoral degrees, the men less so. And then finally, what about the money? If your partner is employed, does he or she earn more or less than you? The top bars there are the people saying my spouse earns more money than me. So this is the women, for example, are much more likely to say that their spouse earns more money than they do. The men are much less likely to say that. And in fact, they're more likely to say that red bar there in the center, the middle bar, that the spouse earns less money, and they're much, much more likely to say their spouse doesn't work at all. So this is just data to support what we were talking about as, the ideal worker with the person who is there to take care of everything for them. And, I want to go a little bit further with this to say that, why is this important? Well, it's important because when you go out and something happens in the family and somebody needs to take care of it, a lot of times it makes more sense to make an economic decision. So if you need to take time off to care for your ailing parent, for example, or your ailing mother-in-law, for example, maybe it's best for the woman to take that time away because she's not making as much money anyway, or didn't even have a job in the first place, which frees the higher earning partner to go and do more great science, you know, while the person making the less money is taking care of the family. This shows up in this next chart. This is the responsibility for housework. These are people who only have employed spouses. So we took out the people who had spouses who weren't working outside the home. You can see that the women, this is, look at the bottom bar, please, the blue bar. The women were more likely to say they did most of the housework, and the men said that too, right? So in the red bar, they said my partner or spouse. So they kind of agreed, right? So the women say they do more of the housework. The men say their spouse does more of the housework. And how does this affect it? Well, you know, there's less time for your physics, less time for your science or whatever if you've got this second job at home. And sociologists there was a sociologist who wrote about 20 years ago a book called The Second Shift, where that's your second job to go home and do that. There's a very high percentage, though, on the positive side, in the very highly developed countries and in the less developed countries, of people saying it's shared equally. And then, of course, in less developed countries, you have more people who can afford domestic workers. Now, this is where I get into some of the more statistical models about resources and opportunities, and I'm going to explain first what I mean by that. These are things that you might need in your career to advance, okay? We asked people, the question was, do you have enough of each of these items? First was funding, office space, lab space, equipment, travel money, clerical support, employees or students. In each case, women were less likely to say that they had enough than men. Okay, and it varied as you went down the rows, but you can look for yourself there and see that, for example, funding, women were less likely to say they had enough than men. All of these differences, these sex differences, are statistically significant. So when it's up here, it means that, you know, statistically, when we tested it, women were less likely to say this than men. I'm going to talk more about these in a minute. Now, opportunities, those were the resources, okay? Things, funding, things that you might need. These are the resources, and then the opportunities are things that you might need to get prestige or to get ahead and advance in your career. Give a talk as an invited speaker. Attend a conference abroad. Conduct research abroad, which is very important for people in less developed countries. Be a boss or manager. Edit a journal. Serve on committees, although sometimes women do get assigned an excess of committee work. And then advising, and then serving on thesis or dissertation committees. Again, in all of these cases, women were less likely to say that they had done these things. This isn't a perception thing. It's like, did you do it or not? Women were less likely to say that they had done these things than men. So for an invited speaker, for example, in the very highly developed countries, 58% of the women had done that compared to 73% of the men. Now, what I just showed you is just looking at sex differences and differences by level of development. But in my statistical model here, what I want to do is look at more than one thing at a time. Because my hypothesis is that not only will sex affect how many opportunities and resources you get, but these other three concepts will as well. Take economic development. If you're from a country that has a less developed economic infrastructure, you're going to have less opportunity for funding, fewer funding resources, for example. Employment sector, because if you're employed in industry, you're going to have different resources and different opportunities than if you're employed in academics. And then finally, age, because, you know, the older you get, the more likely you are to have done some of those things. So in the statistical model, we wanted to control for these other three things to try to see if that made the effect of sex go away. So was it really age? Were all of our men old and that's why they had done more things? I don't know. We were going to test it. Well, actually, I know, but y'all don't, and so I'm going to tell you the answer. What I'm going to do is show you the results, what happened after I tested all these, the effects of all these variables at the same time on opportunities and resources. In the models we tested, sex had a statistically significant effect on all the resources. So that was things like funding,
clerical support, office space, lab space, even controlling for our other three things, okay, even controlling for these three things, the effect of sex was still significant. Okay, so there was still a significant sex difference regardless of age, regardless of where you worked, regardless of what country level of development you were in. Now, it's slightly different for the opportunities, that really giant chart. Anything that's in the other color, in the red, okay, there's shades of blue there, ignore that. That's a word going crazy, and me not fixing it. The red blocks there are things where when we controlled for the level of economic development, age, and I'm having a mind blank, employment sector, thank you. When we controlled for those three things, sex was no longer significant. So that means that the sex difference that we appeared to see here on this chart went away when we took into consideration age, employment sector, and level of development. And those four things were attending a conference abroad, because I guess if you pay your money, they'll let you in, regardless of your sex. Serving on an important committee, serving on an organizing committee, and of course, advising undergraduates. What this means is that when I say the sex difference is not significant, I was testing for, my hypothesis was that men would have more of those things than women. And the things in the red block, what statistically it means is that there's no difference. Women and men are equally likely to do those things. I didn't find anything where the women were more likely to do it than the men. Okay? So in the blue, that was the men more likely to do it than the women. The red boxes were men and women are equally likely to do it, and there were none of them where women did it more than men. Okay, so I'm gonna start building my model here, throwing in some more things, trying to figure out what the big picture is, how it affects. My ultimate dependent variable is your career progress, because that's really what I want to know. How do all these things taken together affect how quickly you progress in your career? And I want to argue that this is the kind of information that we need to know, not just about people's representation, but what do they have? What economic resources and opportunities do they have to advance? And do those make any difference? Because if they make a difference, then we should try to fix those things and make them equitable. Sorry, went the wrong way. What I'm going to show you first is the red arrow here between opportunities and resources and their effect on career progress, okay? Because I wanted to test, well, do resources and opportunities actually make any difference to your career? Well, I mean, that's a testable hypothesis, so we tested it. This one shows the relationship between career progress and opportunities. I've been showing resources first, but this is the opportunities one. You can see what we did here on the y-axis is there were 11 items about have you done these things, and we just added them up. So 11 down there means that these are people who said they'd done all 11 things. And if people said that they had done all 11 things, they were much more likely to say their career had advanced more quickly than their colleagues, okay? So there does seem to be a relationship between how many of the opportunities they did and how fast they had advanced compared to their colleagues. And you can see the fewer opportunities you have, the more likely you are to say you've progressed more slowly than your colleagues. Okay, this is the relationship between career progress and resources. You can see again, we had 7 resources listed out. I just added them up. There is definitely a relationship where the people who had all of the resources were more likely to say they advanced more quickly. Fewer resources meant you were more likely to say you advanced more slowly, which is the red bar there on the right. Okay, so what I was able to show is that opportunities and resources affect your career progress, and that sex all by itself, see the arrow there on the top, has an effect on your career progress, meaning that women, independent of all these other things in this model, and I'll explain this orange box in a minute, women independently of all these other things in the model said that their careers progressed more slowly. Sex also had an effect through lowering your resources and opportunities, so this is what we would call a double whammy, where just being a woman affected your career outcome, and then it also affects it indirectly by lowering your resources and opportunities, which in turn has a direct effect on your career progress. This final block I've put in the model, we talk about blocks of variables in my line of work, is what we call an interaction effect. And you multiply the variables together. And what I'm looking at here is to see if children affect the career progress of men and women differently. So we had a variable that measured, do you have children? Are you male or female? I multiply those together. And what I'm actually going to show you is the effect of children on women and men's careers and how that's different. We found, like some other literature that I'll talk about in a minute, that women with children particularly had slower career progress than men did and than women without children. Here's how you can see it maybe in a more bivariate manner. Actually, there's three variables on here. We've got sex, the number of children, and then how quickly they progressed in their career. And what we want to look at is look at the children columns, which are columns 1 and 3. The women with children are much more likely to say they progressed more slowly than the men with children. And then look at the women and men with no children. The red bar is almost identical. Okay? So this shows what I was talking about with the interaction effect. There's a different effect of having children on women than there is for men. This is also supported by some other research literature done in academics, which shows that children have an effect for women's careers on the likelihood of getting tenure, which is a much more objective measure than we had. It was difficult for us in this study to have objective measures like tenure because educational systems are different across different things. But even though this is a variable about how do you think you progressed, I think it stands up because it's internally consistent, it's supported by the relationship between resources and opportunities, and it's backed up by this other literature that we already know about where women with children are less likely to get tenure in academics. Now, in case that wasn't enough bad news, here's some more. You know how you can say, well, do you want the good news first or the bad news first? Well, I didn't give you a choice, did I? So here's more bad news. We asked a question, how many of you have felt discouraged about physics? Well, almost everybody's been discouraged about their job or about something that they liked. I mean, I know I have, although sociology is so awesome, I'm not sure why anyone would ever be discouraged. It actually has happened to me. like when my model wouldn't converge or something. But anyway, you can see that women were more likely to say that they'd been discouraged than men. That was true in less developed and very highly developed countries. But I wanted to show you, we asked them what they had been discouraged about. Some people said that they'd been discouraged because of their interaction with colleagues. Imagine that. And that was particularly common for women, not common, but it was more true for women in very highly developed countries than it was for the other groups. Okay, did you feel discouraged about your workplace environment? Women in the very highly developed countries are much more likely to say that than the men in the very highly developed countries. Now, one thing we don't know here is we don't know, do these women have different expectations? So they expected things to be better, but they weren't? Or is actually something really bad happening? And maybe on the other hand, maybe the women in the less developed countries didn't expect anything, so they're like, they treat me bad, but what did I expect? We don't know, okay? But that's just an alternative explanation. Here's some things that I also found interesting because it relates to the effect of children. Now, the blue bars in this case talk about the percentage of people who've been discouraged by funding. I mean, almost everybody's been discouraged by funding, right? Unless you get every grant you ever applied for, which, you know, probably some people did that, but I don't know them personally. The women and men over there on the left-hand side with children were much more likely to say that they'd been discouraged by funding. On the other hand, women and men without children were more likely to say they'd been discouraged by their personal life. So a kid might slow your career down, but you're less likely to be discouraged about your personal life if you have a kid. So there's good and bad of kids, right? Everybody knows that who has a kid. Even if you don't have a kid, you probably knew that. Now, here's the good news. Finally, the good news. In almost all our surveys, including on this one, when we ask this question, most people say yes, they would choose physics again. Why? Because they like it. And the fact that they would choose it again makes us happy, okay? I like that picture of him. What are some conclusions we can draw from this? From the data, male physicists are more likely to have wives who don't work or make less money. And as a consequence, male physicists are more likely to fit the ideal worker stereotype and to have someone who takes care of home and family than working women physicists. Across the world, women report access to fewer career advancing opportunities and resources than men do. Remember, we had that with our models with the circles and the arrows. Women with children report the slowest career advancements, echoing findings from other research literature. And finally, what I started out with, representation isn't everything. Okay, because these models would hold up regardless of the representation of people in physics. Of course, if we had more women, then maybe the models wouldn't hold up anymore. But anyway, they would hold up regardless of how many people I had in my survey or how many people there really were in physics right now. But if we got more women, maybe things would change. What are some recommendations I have? For education, we talked this morning about we need to start early getting girls interested in science, and I said I would get rid of the stereotype that girls don't do science and girls don't do physics in particular. And did you know that there's research-based strategies to try to get people to stay in science? And there's a research literature on this, and so if you're interested in this, I could give you some directions to get started to look at the research-based literature on this. And there's actually strategies you can use that have been shown to be effective in getting people to stay in physics. What can we do about opportunities and resources? Well, a lot of the responsibility falls on decision makers. Okay, so if you ever find yourself in a position of authority with the ability to distribute research funding, or office space or something like that, you have to be aware of what I talked about this morning, the unconscious bias or the implicit bias, and work against that so that things are distributed equally. I work at a professional society, so I recommend that we who work with physicists across the world try to work to make sure people understand this, that representation isn't everything, and that we need to pay attention to how things are distributed. And any programs that we fund to help women in science and in physics should be based on documented differences, because right now, at least in the States, we spend a lot of money on trying to fix things that we don't have data on were problems anyway. So if we can show that there are fewer opportunities and resources, then that's where we should put some money. And a lot of the research programs that are designed to fix a problem right now, at least in the States, aren't based on any documented. They don't know if that was really the problem in the first place. Now, work and family, what can we do about that? Well, we talked about that this morning. It's very, very difficult to change cultural expectations, but you can do that by starting to question them yourself, starting to act differently, making different choices. It is a struggle, though. I know that because, you know, even though, like I talked about raising my sons this morning, I did have to send one of them to a daycare once where the teacher took dolls away from the boys, okay? So it's a very difficult struggle to try to get to overcome these stereotypes that are so deeply ingrained in our culture. But the more we start questioning them, I think the more effective we can be, and and that change will eventually come. So that is the end of my talk. We do have... This is my website, or my division's website, aip.org/statistics. On that page, there's a link that says women. If you actually click on the word women, it'll take you to another screen where you can download the article that's based from Physics Today on this, on some of these findings, and that's free. So anyway, that's the end of my talk, and I think I have time for questions. These are the people that worked with me on it, so don't want to leave them out.
Yeah, your account is...
It is working.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
I don't hear it. Oh, there it is, yeah. There are two comments I make. First of all, you downgrade difference between the sexes, and there are differences. When I went to high school, I was the only girl in my physics class and in my chemistry class. We chose these courses. I was the only one interested, and our teachers were all women. Mm-hmm. So this is just, girls have different interests than boys. Girls like to play with dolls. Boys don't. This isn't cultural. This is everywhere in the world. You downplay the role of having children. I realize you have a child yourself. At least you have two children. But raising children means it is a lot of work. And it is not just cultural, but it is biological that women have much more to do with raising children than men do. I mean, this is just a fact of nature. And the fact that their careers are affected by this, of course. A woman with a child is much less likely to pursue a job. Now, you apparently did so with daycare and all that stuff. But it's not the most common way of doing things. And there's no surprise about that. You seem to be surprised. You think that there's something awful about it. There's nothing awful about it. Okay, so I think this whole business about bad news is ridiculous. It's not bad news that women have children and have more to do with raising children than men do. That's nature. That's not, and you seem to overlook any differences between the sexes. And they're not arbitrary. There's Mother Nature there.
Okay, thank you for your comments. This talk is given in the context of the problem being presented as trying to increase the representation of women in physics.
Why do you care?
I think that's something probably for the larger audience to address.
Okay.
We could probably debate that all day, but.
What maybe many people are thinking in response to that is that I don't think that the jury is out on whether we're born with these things.
It's not out, but I explained my background this morning. I said that some people could think that goes too far. Obviously, someone does think that, so I don't really have, that's my training.
I would just add to that many people see it the way that you do, that, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, you're not alone in those thoughts. The idea that somehow there's a lot of evidence that women's brains are somehow extremely different from men's brains in the face of all these other cultural evidences that we have. This is not at all shown in terms of scientific findings that these brain differences lead girls to play with dolls.
I would encourage our original questioner to read some older work by Anne Fausto Sterling, where she talks about our sex differences real, and she's actually able to show that, you know, for the majority of people on a bell curve, there's more overlap than there are differences. But if you need that reference, I can give that to you. She's a biologist, by the way.
Thank you so much for all of the great data in your talk and the great analysis. I loved it. And I just am curious about one more question that you might have, which is, you chopped between more developed and less developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
And have you started, or do you have any plans on looking, sort of comparing country by country? Because I'm influenced by Sharon Trawick's,
right,
where she was looking at differences in Europe and in the United States and in Japan. And I'm wondering if there's any, if you have any ideas about how these differences might play out if you looked at those kind of geographic differences.
We want to look at the geographic differences between countries, but we haven't done it yet. We've got a ton of data sitting here. I haven't even finished analyzing everything I want to do, which isn't all about sex. I want to look at mobility across countries. I also want to look at some of the open-ended answers where people wrote in things. We had to have it translated, and we have to code it. It's very time-consuming. And I also want to look at differences across countries. I'm especially interested in some of the differences say between European countries like France and Germany, which have very different representations of women in physics. So I kind of want to look at, you know, the differences within European countries, for example. But to make a country by country analysis, we have to have enough respondents. So we can't do it for every country because some countries had too few respondents. But yeah, we're hoping to do it. I mean, there's so much data, I might die before it's done.
So thanks, Rachel, for all this amazing data, and I know how much time and effort it takes to collect all of this, so it's really a worthy effort. And going back to data, actually there are studies recently that have shown that math and science abilities, there are no differences in young children in their abilities. So that would imply that when we do see such differences in career progress in the future, that there are significant environmental and cultural effects here. So it is an important thing to consider. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. I have another suggestion I would like to, maybe you can look, want to look into. So we're talking about whether women will stay in physics and that sort of thing early on. And early on, that's before they settle with a partner who might be supportive, right? You know, we have this post-selection, probably a lot of women physicists who come out to be successful and can manage to stay, they do have a supportive partner. Yeah, so I mean, so before that, like all the whole dating aspect, I was talking to John earlier. So what if, like the fact that, you know, when women go into environment where this male aggression happens, or maybe like just the guys hitting on them, and like, can you study some women before, like at the early stage of their career, where their psychology changes because in reaction to these behaviors and what they encounter, and that can affect how they approach physics and like how they approach their study. And is there anything you can do to ask questionnaires like that between a man and woman, and maybe eventually lead to some sort of policy or even just etiquette suggestions of how to behave at workplace that might help women feel more equal in the pursuit?
Thank you. That's a great idea. And what you're talking about is called a longitudinal study, where you take the same group of people and follow them as they get older. I have worked on that kind of study before. Those kind of studies tend to be very expensive because you have to literally find the same person year to year to year and get them, convince them to answer the questionnaire again. And we are, though, trying to do, we have a longitudinal study started for astronomy graduate students where in 2006, 2007, we sent them questions, and we're actually, the second questionnaire is out now. Some of them are still in graduate school. Some of them are in postdocs and things like that. So we're trying to start and follow people as they progress up their careers. Now, it would be awesome to start with children, but the research restrictions on children are enormous. Okay, there have been studies done. I don't think there have been any new ones started in a while where they followed children as they got older, and those were some of the things I worked on in graduate school, but it wasn't specifically related to physics. But just because of the difficulty with researching children, at least in the States, there's a lot of restrictions on it. So, but anyway, that's a great idea, and we are trying it at least in astronomy, which is a much smaller group than physics.
Yeah, just I guess I think it could potentially be a very important factor in the development, and could, you know, it could impact just how they see the whole field and everything, and maybe if it's just to bring attention to
right.
that aspect.
Right, right.
In the data you showed...
Oh, there you are.
In the data you showed, there were two aspects I found interesting. Now, I'm not sure if I was reading it correctly. One was that there were more men in the more developed countries whose partners didn't have jobs.
In the more developed countries?
Right, like compared to the less developed countries, which was, I would always think it's the other way around because there are less jobs in general in less developed countries. And if there are jobs, they go to men more than women. Yeah.
Is this the one you're talking about?
Yes.
No, that's the money. Wait, this is schooling.
Yeah, but you had spouses not employed.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so there is a difference between the men in less developed countries and men in the more highly developed countries. And I think I heard someone in the audience say that it's easier
to
develop to support a family in with a high income that you're more likely to have in the very highly developed countries.
Yeah, okay. That is one thing I found interesting because I would think it's the other way around. And like between.
Yeah, I haven't really thought that much about it, but I'm... You know, that would be my first reaction,
yeah.
Whoever that was in the audience.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see. The other interesting thing was that men with children reported the quickest career progress compared to all the other groups.
Oh, yeah, I have thought about this one. She's talking about men with children and here in the third column. This refers to, it's kind of been, time's been hard for me to explain, but sociologists have what's called a normative expectation, meaning that people are doing what they're expected to do, And as we know, in our culture, it's normative for a man to have children and keep working. I think it's becoming more normative for a woman to do so, but still not quite there yet. And when people do what society expects them to do, they get more positive outcomes. So you can see that here with the men with children. And the women with children, I think, are still not necessarily doing what is normative or expected. That is going back to work after having a child.
So I know there was a couple more people with their hands up. I think we'll just take two more, and then maybe it's time to move on.
Thanks so much for this. Do you have a sense, some of the patterns you describe look pretty familiar. We've seen similar studies in other disciplines, both within and without the STEM disciplines. Do you have a sense of whether any of these data are distinctive within physics? Is there a particular, I could imagine, for instance, I'm a philosopher, and philosophy, like physics, does a really bad job of recruiting and retaining women, but maybe resources are a bigger deal for physicists who need labs than for philosophers who need pencils, right?
Well, theoretical physicists don't need a lab, but yeah.
So is there anything about this data that, as so far as you know, stands out compared to other kind of recruitment and retention data in other disciplines?
One of the things that's, I don't know if it really, well, if it really stands out compared to others, but I was surprised at looking at the data to find that everything was different. I expected that some of the things wouldn't show a sex difference. Although I've been studying women in physics for a long time, I was surprised that everything we asked about, at least initially, before I controlled for the other factors, showed a sex difference. I think the results are pretty consistent, though, with some of the studies in the other discipline, which means it just, you know, it's part of our culture. But thanks for asking that.
Hello? Sadly, my question is related to the first thing that was brought up, but that was a little bit in a hostile and an environment. I'm not really interested in attacking, or I'm just genuinely interested. So for example, when you investigated the correlation on the opportunities, on the progress, you saw that there's a correlation. But for example, you implicitly assumed that it works in one way, and that it's not because if you have more progress that you have access to more opportunities. In the sense, if somebody does more interesting research, for example, he'll probably get more invited to conferences, things like that. And so I suppose more generally, I wonder, is it true that you implicitly assume that you even discard by default the option that one sex might have different capabilities in a certain field than a different sex? Like, isn't that something, my question is just, do you discard that possibility by default?
That what?
That one sex might have different capabilities than another sex in a certain field.
Might have more difficulties than another?
Different capabilities.
Oh, different capabilities. I don't know that this model does that, because it was just asking people, do you have these things? Have you done these things?
Right, but you assume they're...
And these are all physicists.
But you assume they're products of the environment, right? You assume...
I don't know that this model makes that assumption. I was talking earlier about...
But your conclusions, when you conclude that we have to give more opportunities, you assume it's an external factor.
You're right. Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right.
But I'm just wondering, so you assume that by default, I don't know anything about this topic, so is that, according to you, properly investigated already, or?
That if we want things to equal out, that we need to give more resources and opportunities? You're asking me if that's backed up by literature?
No, that in principle, same sexes have the same capabilities
in
all fields.
That if we gave women equal access to opportunities and resources, that they could do physics, I think that's what you're asking me. Like, if we just suddenly equaled things out for the women that are already in physics, would they be able to do, would,
yeah,
would women be
same,
able to do,
yeah,
physics?
I'm
thinking about that one. I think that's the unwritten assumption of probably this research and this conference.
Okay.
I think it's okay to question that, but I think that is the assumption of this research and this conference. I mean, we heard the director of the Institute this morning say that excluding women from science was bad for science, okay, and bad for the women.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not saying you don't, but I'm just saying that there are people who, I think there, it would be difficult to test that with data. I mean, because you would have to have some sort of social experiment that wouldn't even be possible or something like that. But again, there is research literature on math and science ability. If you want to generalize up from that to physics ability is very difficult to measure because it's not measured by our secondary and elementary school system. So they do measure math and science, and there has been a lot of research, like I think it was Shohini said, that there are more similarities up to a certain age than there are differences. Now, you could then come back and argue that, you know, at some point in puberty, some testosterone kicks in and makes you, like, good at differential equations. I don't know. There actually have been those studies on the relationship between testosterone and aggressiveness. I mean, there's a lot of research on this. So the problem is that there's never been a gene linked to a specific behavior, okay? Because genes always express themselves in an environment. So if we were looking for a math gene or a science gene or something like that, that hasn't been shown to my knowledge. I mean, we have found genes that express themselves as breast cancer, for example, but not as physics ability. If we ever get to that level of sophistication and, you know, sociology's proven wrong, I guess then they can shut the discipline down or adapt it or something like that. But I think you're right to question that. I think that's a good question.
Can present your data to answer his question. So, I mean, in that, there's the place where you show the resources, like the number of resources people have versus their progress, how fast they progress. Uh-huh. If you just do that plot separate for men and women, I think that can be more convincing. You can tell. You just do the same plot.
Right. I did that plot that she's talking about separately for men and women. There's no sex difference in it. That's why anything that's lumped together for men and women is because there is no statistical sex difference in it. So if you think that answers your question, then great. But that question is like actually saying, in an environment, in a culture, in a work environment, what do you have versus what does the other group have? But for both sexes, the more, oh, I see how it does answer your question, the more resources and opportunities you have, the more quickly you're going to progress in your career. So I guess that partially answers your question. I was just trying to go a little bit deeper than that. But I don't know that we need to look at genes. Someday maybe we can. So.
Okay, so maybe that's Rachel again.